The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, August 17, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesco. And, Chet, as you can tell, we're fighting off the bug. We're trying to get through this thing, but the throat's not real good, but we're going to make it happen. It's show night, and we've got Eagles preseason to talk about, which I was part of, the return of Chase Utley last night, which you were part of, and we'll unveil our first member of the Philly Press Box Radio Hall of Fame broadcaster, as voted by the fans. But more importantly, I'm excited about the return of the Invincible, Vince Papale, to the show tonight. Maybe we can ask Vince who his vote would be for the all-time greatest Philly broadcaster. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. And yes, Bill, plenty to talk about once again on the Philly sports scene. You take care of that voice. Don't do too much talking because, you know, you got to take care of yourself, man. You're not getting any younger.
Well, that's right. I'm going to leave most of this to you, at least for the first part, but we'll get it started. And we want to let our listeners know that our Carl's Card, the collectible trivia question, will be tonight. We'll be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo of the Invincible Vince Papale to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question right about 7:27. So write this number down so you're ready. Our shopforkisses.org phone line is 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. So with that business taken care of, let's welcome tonight's guest, make the return visit to the radio roundtable, Vince Papale. Welcome back, Vince.
Great to be back, Bill and Chet. Hey, Bill, man, way to fight through the pain. Proud of you, brother. Good job.
Well, I appreciate that. We're having a little struggle, but hey, it's show night. Got to make it happen.
It's game day. You've got to be ready.
That's right. Hey, I was at the game the other night and saw you on the field, saw your wife, saw your daughter, Gabby, there in the alumni celebration, and looked like you guys were having a good time. And I have to tell you, Vince, that one of my favorite Eagles of all time, besides my favorite, who is Bill Berge, but my other favorite, Ike Kelly, was in the house. I love Ike Kelly.
Oh, man, you have no idea. Ike Kelly actually was my idol. He still doesn't believe it. I keep telling him because when I know you were talking about broadcasting icons. But without a doubt, it's Bill Campbell. And I'll never forget Bill Campbell's call back in the day when I was in Glen Olden, Pennsylvania, listening to the Eagles games with Bill Campbell talking about Ike Kelly. You could just feel it and hear it, and some of the hits that he made. And he was the original bomb squatter, who's nuts guy for the Philadelphia Eagles. And you know, it was a certain breed. And I was really excited, Phil and Chet, to be there with my man and my roommate, my teammate, my best friend, the godfather of my children, and that's Denny Franks. We had a blast. He came up. He flew in and stayed with Janet and I, he and his wife, Nancy. It was 36 of the most crazy hours you could possibly imagine.
Well, I got to meet Denny for the first time at the pregame as well. And him and I have a mutual friend, Bob Sullivan. And Bob introduced me to Denny before the game. That was great, too. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned about Ike Kelly. I talked to Kevin Riley, and Kevin Riley told me that Ike Kelly was his favorite player as well back in the day.
Isn't that something? Well, it was Ike Kelly and, of course, Tommy McDonald, number 25. And, yeah, we make a big deal about Tommy in the movie. But, oh, my God. It was so great, Bill and Chet, to be there and be with all those guys and to get to see a few I haven't seen for a few years. We're no longer referred to as alumni. Now they're legends. It's, that you know, and but whatever, I don't care what, you know, I don't care what you call me. Just call me. But it was a terrific event. I just wish one year they would have a whole a Legends / Alumni Weekend and have a Big Ten and, you know, some interaction with corporations and do it during a regular season game as opposed to a preseason game. And hopefully, you know, they might do that. But, you know, to get us get like 53 guys together in a setting like that, it was beyond. It was just so great. The stories, you know, the old saying, the older you get, the better you used to be. And, boy, there were some great stories flying around.
Oh, I bet. All right, Vince. Now, we know your story, making the Eagles as a 30-year-old following an open tryout, 3 seasons playing for Dick Vermeil as a special teams warrior, et cetera. But we want to know tonight how the story ended up on the big screen. Why did it take nearly 30 years, and how did it all come to fruition?
Well, you know, the story's been sitting out there for a while. We made a couple of attempts to try to get something going. And actually, ABC was going to do something several years ago. But we went head-to-head with the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders and another thing. I don't know what it was. And they came to me and they said, you know, we need a little bit more juice. You know, we want to sort of jazz this thing up and give it a little bit more sex appeal. And I refused to do it. I said, you know, this isn't a movie about anything like that. It's just a movie about the dreams and overcoming the dreams. So, of course, they went with the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. But a few years ago, anyway, Stan Hockman wrote a great article about it in the Daily News years ago. It was so funny. I mean, Stan, nobody could do it better than Stan. You know, it was really funny. But a few years ago, Rocky, you know, and I was always known as a real life Rocky, being the 30-year-old Hammond Egger. And Rocky's turned 25 in 2002. So the NFL Films and ESPN contacted me through NFL Films. And a young guy from South Philly, Pete DiStefano, who said that I was his idol when he was playing. They said, hey, man, would you mind if we do a Monday night feature on ESPN when the Eagles were playing the 49ers back then in 02? And that was a year when McNabb was down and Detmer came in, and then Detmer got injured, and then who comes in but A.J. Feely, and it was beginning of the legend of A.J. Feely. And in that game and then that night, I was the feature for the thing they called Distant Replay. Remember Distant Replay that ESPN had?
Well,
I was a Distant Replay guy, and they did this feature about a 5-minute thing. You can get it; it's up on YouTube, and it was this feature that was sort of comparing me to Rocky, and we had the Rocky flavor and all that stuff going on. And the next day Hollywood's calling. And we started, you know, and you know, we're the guys out, you know, we want your life rights, we want this and that. And when we told some people, and actually I went to a couple of people and to mention who they are, and mentioned to them, hey, man, you know, there's some interest from Hollywood movie. You know, it'll never happen. I mean, they're giving me the same crap that I got 30, 40 years ago when I wanted to try out for the Eagles. You know, it'll never happen, right? Well, guess what?
Right.
We decided, okay, we're going to go outside of Philadelphia. Test some things out, and we chose a guy by the name of Ken Mock from back then. It was called 10x10, and he was the creator of America's Next Top Model. But what he did is he came up with a game plan, and he said, we're going to do this. We're going to do a spec script. We're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And they sent us the first script. It was sort of okay, but it sort of lacked the juice that I feel that it felt it needed. So at that time, you know, Janet, my wife Janet, was a former USA world gymnast, and she's on the USA Olympic Committee. So they're having the Olympic trials out in California in Anaheim, and Janet's invited out there because she's on the committee. And I said, well, let's go on out there, and I'll meet with the writers of the movie. And so in 02, we go out, and I met them, and we changed the script, and one thing leads to another, and in 2014, they put the script up for auction, and Disney outbid everybody for the script, and I became their property. And then before Bing Bang, you know, Mark Wahlberg becomes part of my life. Elizabeth Banks, you know, is going to play Janet. We got Greg Kinnear, who nailed Dick Vermeil. And the movie came out right around Labor Day in 06, and we're celebrating our 10th anniversary. It's been an amazing run.
Yep. You mentioned the writers. It was written primarily by Brad Gann, who also worked on 2011's Soul Surfer, and directed by Erickson Kaur. How much did they involve you in the whole process?
Well, you know, I didn't get so involved in Brad developed the original script, and then he sort of stepped away. And oh, my God, Brad is just so great. We're so close friends. And Erickson Core just recently did the Point Break, the new Point Break. He was the director of that. But Erickson, he sort of kept me at I'm not sure if we ever really got along, but he sort of kept me at arm's length. But everybody else sort of embraced me in terms of, well, you know, let's look at the wardrobe. Let's take a look at your pictures. Let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at that. And I worked with them very, very closely in the development of those kinds of things, the aesthetics of the movie in the background, the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff. And then Erickson and I started to collaborate in some other things. And, you know, they brought me in as a – I had my cameo role as my wife. And there's this great scene with my children in it, that one scene after the Cowboys game where the little boy runs out in front of the car and to pick up the ball with number 83 in his back. Well, that's my son, Vinny, who's now a starting wide receiver for the University of Delaware. And the little girl who threw the ball out onto the street is my daughter, Gabriella, who just graduated from Syracuse and is interning right now with the 76ers. So, you know, it's just a lot of fun. And let me tell you guys, the best part of this is just to see the recognition of kids on your face, you know, that I'm the invincible guy. You know, I'm at this football camp up in Schwanksville, and there's a whole bunch of kids that are junior cadets there, right? And, of course, there's a lot of state troopers there and others that have risked their lives, you know, Blue Lives Matter. And these guys are up there, and they're saying, hey, you know, that's the guy from Invincible. And it's really cool to see the reaction of these 13, 14-year-olds. And, you know, to the point where they're coming up, wanting pictures, asking for autographs, and you know, and it passed through so many generations. To me, is the thing I'm most proud of, and it's really very exciting, and it never gets old. It's the coolest thing you could possibly imagine.
Now, Vince, you mentioned Mark Wahlberg was the guy who got to play you, and while the film was being made, you interviewed Mark Wahlberg about playing you on the screen. I think it was at the Link, as a matter of fact. And we have a clip right here in which he admits, because he's a bit younger than all of us, he wasn't really familiar with you as a player. Listen up.
There's a person from Philadelphia or an Eagles fan that doesn't know who you are. But, you know, that puts a lot more weight on my shoulders because I want to do you and the fans and the people of Philadelphia some justice in doing this role. And what if there's no pressure? The guy is here on set every day. What am I going to say? I'm tired. I need a break. I'm hurt. You can't do that. The movie's called Invincible.
So Mark Wahlberg, how did he do?
Oh, my God, you're kidding me? Well, first of all, I can't believe you used that clip because
yep.
I use that. It's out on YouTube. So, again, you can find it on YouTube. Just, you know, go visit the power of YouTube, Mark Wahlberg, and you'll see it. And I use that clip when I give speeches because everybody, you know, everybody wants to know the Wahlberg piece. And that's a great line. You know, the movie's Invincible. The first time I met
mm-hmm.
Mark, he says, look, man, I'm under a lot of pressure. And I said, why is that? He said, it's the first time I ever played a movie where the guy I was playing was still alive at the end of the movie, you know, because he was in Planet of the Apes. He was in the biggest wave, you know, whatever it was. And Mark was just, he was phenomenal. My God, all he wanted to do was learn. And so much fun to be around and bright. He just loved my children. I have videos and pictures of that I'm going to get eventually out of my website of the celebrate our 10th anniversary I filmed so much of the movie, and you see his interaction with the kids, you see his interaction with the fans. He never turned out an autograph, never turned out a picture, never was too big for anybody else there. And I just love Mark. And now he's coming into Philly soon because they opened up the new Wahlburgers down there in the
yep.
Northern Liberties, but there's going to be a grand opening. And Mark's coming in town. We're going to connect, and then you get a chance to sample the Invincible Wahlburgers. So that's a pretty good deal.
There you go.
Mark's the man. I just love Wahlburger. I mean, Wahlburger. I like Wahlburgers too, but I love Mark.
Hey, Vince, now that it's the 10th year, when we had you on some months ago, you talked about possibly the NFL or NFL films or something, doing a little something with the 10th year anniversary. Is that going to happen?
Well, nothing right yet. I know the Eagles are going to do, they're going to come out with some special that's going to wind up on their website and do some other stuff. We have a few things that we're working on, and certainly one of the things I want to do is I'd like to do another screening of the movie And if the heavy hitters can't come in, I want to get some of the locals to come back and do a fundraiser for the Travis Manion Foundation. And that is definitely going to happen some way, somehow. You know, it's just a matter of getting the theater to do it, and, you know, and putting the pieces together. But, you know, I've got about three or four months. We got from basically from here to the Super Bowl to pull all this off, even though the movie is coming. Its real anniversary is about 2 weeks away, the 28th of August. But, you know, it'll still go through football. So we're working on it and see what happens. But you know what? I don't care. It's a reaction. You know, I know what it's going to be like when I walk into the place I'm going to go in to see my nephew in a few minutes. The reaction to people, you know, in this Philadelphia area. You know, I love Philly, and my wife is, just say the other night after the introduction and the cheers from the crowd, she said it just gives me goose pimples because Philly just loves you so much, and it's not just Philly now, you know, it's around the country, and it's the story of all of us, you know, that had a dream and somebody said you can't do it, you bang and you fight your way through it, and here you are, you guys. I mean, look at you got your show. I mean, here you are, and that's what Invincible is all about.
Yep, well, I was one of them that was on my feet Thursday night, by the way, Vince.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Vince, the movie had a $30 million budget.
Yeah.
The box office, nearly $58 million, so about twice the budget. It had a very sizable audience. Those numbers don't even include all the folks who bought DVDs and Blu-ray copies of the film. So, you know, certainly done well over the last 10 years. I want to ask you, though, filmmakers take liberties with real-life facts when putting a story on the big screen. The one I want to ask you about, how did Janet feel about being turned into a Giants fan?
No problem at all. She said, you know, we had talked about it, Janet being a – those who don't know, she was on USA World Gymnastics team, and actually, she sprained her ankle in the trials for the Olympics, the Munich Olympics. That's the Kathy Rigby Olympics, and she sprained an ankle, and she was in the games, and then she came up with a no score for the final event. And it's not like it is now where they have committees and they, you know, oh, this one's going to go all around, this one's going to go individual, and all that crap. You know, you either, it's like in track and field, you either make it that day or you don't make it, and. And that particular day, she wound up one spot off, but she did compete on the world team. So that's her pedigree. She wound up coaching at the University of Pennsylvania and also setting all Penn State's diving records after she blew her knee out doing gymnastics. So that aside, this is her background, coaching and teaching gymnastics all over the world, and now they make her a Giants fan. But that was a compromise that we had to make with the NFL in order to get their endorsement and their intellectual property rights. And, you know, we looked at it, gave it to Janet. She says, you know what? It's not my story. It's your story. We would love to have Invincible 2 come out because the original script written by Brad Gann had Janet as the gymnast. But the NFL insisted that Janet be a Giants fan and also insisted, you know, on the bartender thing to create conflict and humor. And it played real well. And you know what? And it plays real well. And it's just a question you just asked. And I get asked it 1,000 times when I'm out speaking. So, you know, it gives me something to talk about. But, hey, it's all good. And the movie's grossed nearly a total of $750 million. That's pretty good.
Whoa.
Stuff.
Wow.
I checked it out the other day in IMDb, International Movie Database. It's done really, really well over the last 10 years. But, you know what?
Wow.
It's not about that. It's just, again.
Wow. Well, Vince, you mentioned earlier about Tommy McDonald, and I was wondering, you know, Ray Dittinger did a play recently with Tommy and me, and Chet got to see it. I did not get to see it. Did you happen to go see that? Is Tommy
player? No, I've heard it's spectacular. I just had knee surgery, and I was away for a while when that was happening, and not able to get around, but I am now. I'm not pitching this football camp 8 weeks later, but. I saw Merle Reese at the alumni night, and Merle was telling me it was just spectacular. So I hope I'll get a chance. You know, Ray Dittinger and I go so far back. We played Little League football together against each other when I was playing for Glen Olden, Glendale Indians, and he was playing against Ridley Park. And it's just so cool, the relationships and the people.
Yeah, and you remember, I'm a Collingdale guy myself. I remember going to the old Texaco Papali's gas station where my father used to get his cars done by Jesse.
That's right, Jesse Papali. God bless his soul. And what a great man he was. Thank God my son got Jesse's sight, not my wife's. But, you know, that recessive, thank God for Uncle Jesse's recessive gene. It wound up with my son, who's now about 6'2", 210. So,
nice.
Well, Jesse, we all love that. You know, of course, across the street, the bar, the bear, and oh, my God, it's just so much, so many great memories from Collingdale, Sharon Hill, Glen Olden, Prospect Park, Norwood, Interborough. I mean, geez, it doesn't get better than that.
Hey, Vince, we're running out of time already because it just goes so quickly. I just want to ask you your impression of the Eagles going into the 2016 season. What do you think of Doug Peterson, the injuries they've had, the quarterback situation? Sum it up for me in like 30 to 40 seconds.
Well, first of all, you know, speaking of Doug Peterson, Doug's a very close friend of mine. My wife actually happens to be his realtor. I've known Doug since 99. So I'm right there in his corner. To the extent where we sort of sit in the owners in their box for the games, you know, and I'm real excited for Doug and this opportunity. He's taking heat already. I heard some stuff on talk radio this morning. I wish I got jumped through the wires and gotten impounded the guys in the, just give the guy a break. You know, as far as quarterback situation,
yeah.
It's very obvious where they want to go, you know, shame about Carson Wentz, but, you know, stick with Bradford. I think the guy's got some talent. He's a winner, and let's see what happens. And overall, hopefully they'll be patient with him and give him this year. And Doug's organized. He knows the game. He's a player's coach. They love him. They're going to play hard for him and see what we do after that.
Very good. Well, hey, Vince, as Chad said, we're running out of time. And usually we close out our segments with what we call Fast Five, where basically Chad asks five simple questions. You give five simple answers. You up for that?
I'm up for anything you guys want to throw at me. Come on, baby.
Of course, you're invincible. All right. Vince, the movie's been out about 10 years now. Rough estimate, how many times have you seen Invincible all the way through?
All the way through, no less than 60 times in pieces. It comes on a lot. You see a lot on the cable, and as I'm flipping through, I'll look at it. But overall, over 50 times.
Nice. What is your favorite scene in the movie?
Favorite scene in the movie is the scene when I just described with my children, you know, where Vinny runs out in front of the car and my daughter Gabriella throws the ball out in the street. Without a doubt, every time I see it, brings tears to my eyes.
I know you like the rough touch football scene too, though.
Oh, no question about that, you know, and it's right in the beginning, you know, where you hear that music coming on, Let It Ride, just so awesome, and it's one of my favorite songs I listen to, but they're that about the touch football in my days at Cannon Scout Bay, Deacon Hill House. Oh, my God, I paid for about 14s down at Delco. It was so cool.
All right. Now, there's been lots of other inspirational, overcoming-the-odds sports movies, from Rocky to Rudy, Miracle, The Rookie, not to mention Blindside, We Are Marshall, Remember the Titans. Do you have a personal favorite?
Yeah, Miracle. Miracle's about USA, and I'm all about the USA. I'm all about the American flag. I'm all about law enforcement. I coach with an FBI agent. And, Miracle without a doubt, you know, that one just resonated really well with me. And I had the great opportunity to meet all the guys, the real Miracle guys and the fake Miracle guys. And they're just so cool.
As you mentioned, a Wahlburgers just opened in the Fishtown or Northern Liberty section of Philly. Give me your review of the Wahlburger.
The Wahlburger? I love it. It's absolutely spectacular. And the store itself down there in the Northern Liberties, it's phenomenal. They took that little corner right there, the little triangle, and it's just great. I would give it on a scale of five stars out of five.
And finally, Vince, we'll see how smart you are. Who was the better athlete, Vince Papale or Janet Cantwell Papale?
Oh, no doubt about my wife Janet. She's the better athlete, and she's the smarter of the two.
You are a smart man, Vince Papale. Fast Five with Vince Papale. Great job, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
Hey, Vince, one final question for you on our you mentioned Bill Campbell, but our vote for our Philly Press Box Radio Hall of Fame broadcaster was Harry Callis, Gene Hart, Bill Campbell, or Merle Reese. You get to pick one.
Well, you know,
pretty
I'm
tough.
Sort of partial. I'm sort of partial. And I love Merle, and I love them all, and I love Harry. But, you know, Bill Campbell, I just remember him, and like I said, I'll never forget his call of the world championship back in 60 and those great calls back in the day when I was dreaming to be a Philadelphia Eagle. and Tommy McDonald was my idol. So it's got to be Bill Campbell. It's got to be the Super.
Fantastic. As Merle
Thanks, Vince.
Calls him, the Dean.
Oh, yeah, the Dean. That's right. Without
that's
a doubt.
It.
Hey, guys, I love it. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being on the air with you. Let's talk again during the season and see if we can come up with
Sounds
anything
good.
Smart.
Talk
all
to
right,
you soon, Vince.
Thanks. Appreciate
okay.
you joining us.
See you, guys.
All right. Okay, Jen, fantastic stuff. As you know, let's get jump right over to our trivia question. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. As mentioned, we'll be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles of the Invincible Vince Papale to the first person that can call and correctly answer this trivia question. Here we go. In the last three seasons under Chip Kelly, finished second on the team in total tackles in 2013, first on the team in 2014, and second on the team last year, 2015. Can you name him? Chet, did you know this one?
It would have been a guess. So the guy who is the answer would have been among the possibilities, but I did not absolutely positively know it. So, no, I did not know it.
Well, and as I was looking for a question and I saw this come up, I had to work through it a little bit, and I was surprised myself at the answer. So I thought it was a pretty good question. So let's run through it again real quick.
Last
season under Chip Kelly, this player finished second on the team in total tackles in 2013. First on the team in 2014, and second on the team last year, 2015. Can you name him? All right, let's take
Tough
a break.
One. Thanks Tough
our
one.
Sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets your cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. So, Chet, that brings us to our first Philly Press Box Radio Hall of Fame broadcaster ballot. As the review, as we just talked to Vince about, we came up with four legends on the first ballot. Excuse me. Bill Campbell, Gene Hart, Harry Callison, Merle Reese. We ran the ballot from last Wednesday night after the show to today when we cut it off right around noon. By the way, check your video you put together from last week's show was excellent.
Yeah, thanks. A fun little 10-minute video that we put together. It took about 3 or 4 hours, actually, to be honest, to get all those sound bites and pictures together. But it was loads of fun doing it, and it was nice to see that it got some good reaction from folks. So thanks for saying that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the whole process here with these four guys really got a lot of reaction. You don't know who's really reading, who's really looking, but these four guys got a lot. Of course, a lot of other names, by some, and some of them other names got thrown out there, too, that we'll include next year. But I think we did a good job getting these four together. And not surprising is that Harry Callis is the fan's choice. But somewhat surprising to me, Chet, was how close the voting was between three of the four candidates. There was a total of 106 votes cast. Harry had 36 votes. Gene Hart was next with 30, and Bill Campbell third with 25, and Mel Reese was a little bit further back with 15. Does that surprise you any?
Yeah, I silently predicted that Harry would be our winner, so that didn't really shock me. Everybody loved Harry. The surprise to me was that Merrill Reese didn't get more support. But anyway, congrats to the late, great Harry the K. And Bill Campbell, who was Vince's choice, also did pretty well, as you noted. He finished a close third, Gene Hart right in the middle of Harry and Bill Campbell. But, yeah, Harry number one, Gene Hart number two, Bill Campbell number three, all fairly close. Like I said, what surprised me was that there wasn't more voting for Merrill Reese.
Well, you know, I think that the deal with Merle, the way I see it, is unless you're listening to the Eagles on the radio, you miss a lot of Merle Reese because you're always getting these national TV knuckleheads on, and you miss the passion of the Merle Reeses of the world unless you're in your car somewhere or you turn off your TV and put on your radio and try to match it up.
Yeah, that could be the solution. It could be you know, the explanation.
Yeah. So, but good stuff, and I don't think anybody could argue with Harry being that guy. And if Gene Hart or Bill Campbell or Merle Reese, for that matter, would have got in, there certainly would be no arguments among anyone there, I don't think.
No, they're all Hall of Famers. We know that.
That's right. Well, hey, Chad, as you know, last Thursday night, I was at Lincoln Financial Field to watch the Eagles and Bucks open the preseason and see the debut of that Carson Wentz. It was the game was somewhat traumatic.
Yeah, and even though it was a preseason game, it's always fun to go to the link for some live football action. And, hey, when Carson Wentz is being inducted in Canton in, you know, 18 or 20 years, you could say you were there for his very first pro game. But seriously, what were your key observations from the preseason game?
Well, I think first and most importantly, and we actually talked about this last week, it's one of the things I wanted to see in the preseason was the receiving core, and I'm not going to lie to you, they were horrible.
Yeah.
You know, Chase Daniel looked bad. Chase Daniel had no protection, and he had no one open. And I think the thing that, as you watch the game where you could see the whole field, you know, differently than on TV, Chase Daniel actually made all good decisions by getting his brains beat in, because he was taking sacks rather than throw bad passes. No one was open. There was no separation anywhere. And that second offensive line who was in there for most of that time was not very good either. And to the point that they actually brought some of the first team guys back in at receiver. But it was just they were weak. And, you know, they tried to address that this week with this trade for Dorial Green-Beckham. We'll see what happens. And he's definitely a risky guy to take. Got a lot of problems. And why would Tennessee be getting rid of a second-round pick if he was the real deal? But, hey, at this point, they got to do something.
Yeah. I mean, the offensive line was bad and the receiving core was bad. Nelson Agholor can't even get a catch in a preseason game. He looked like he wasn't going all out to me, too, which is crazy. A guy who's in his second year, you know, needs to prove something. So, I'm worried about Agholor. I was really hoping he'd have a nice second year, but I know it's just one preseason game, but from what I understand, he hasn't even had a good training camp, so he's got to turn it around quick or he might be out of here. As for the trade, I love it. I mean, it's not a slam dunk, obviously, but you gave up Dennis Kelly, who was a backup for, you know, a bad O-line already. He's been a guy who hasn't really played a whole lot in his 5 or 6 years in the league. I'm fine with it. You got a guy with some potential, at least. He's only 23. He's got decent speed. He's got size. He's 6'5". And he did have 32 catches last year, and I think 30 of them were for first downs. He had 4 touchdowns, all of them, you know, coming in the red zone. So he had better numbers than Agholor. I mean, he's certainly worth a shot. Maybe a change of scenery. Maybe Greg Lewis as his coach, you know, will, you know, talk some sense into him. And keep in mind, they just hired Brian Dawkins to an expanded role today, not just as a scout. So, you know, maybe Dawkins will have a little talk with him and get these guys in shape, because they got to get some better play from the wide receivers and from the offensive line. So we can hope.
Yeah, well, and I will tell you this about Carson Wentz. Boy, he's a good-looking kid. You know, he looks like a pro quarterback. He's 6'6", whatever he is, 220 pounds. He just looks the part. And he made some mistakes. He had some open receivers that he missed. But he also has a whip of an arm. I'd say he's a work in progress, but I'm not going crazy and going to drive any Wentz trains or anything like that. But I certainly like what I saw, and I think they definitely have something to build on with him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the numbers weren't great, but there were several drops, and he just looks like a quarterback. It's just a shame he ended up getting hurt and will miss probably the rest of the preseason. He's hoping to come back for Game 4. We shall see. And the plan right now is, you know, not to play him during the regular season, but that could certainly change if Bradford gets hurt and his backup, Daniel, proves as ineffective as we think he might. We shall see. In the meantime, Bill, I believe we have a phone call. So let's see who we have. Who's calling the Philly Press Box Radio?
Hello?
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good. Who do we have?
You have the driver of the Carson Wentz bandwagon.
This must be Danny Boy. This is Chip Ferry Boy.
Yeah, this is Dan. This is Danny. Not much. Just listening to another great show. Love listening when Vince Papale's on.
Yeah, Vince is great.
You must have Googled the answer to this question.
I'm never going to tell.
Which is legal. That's okay, I guess.
I'll never tell.
Come on, admit it. You didn't know this one, Danny.
I had an inkling, but I'm not going to say whether I was right or wrong. I did confirm my guess, though.
Okay. What is your guess?
Go ahead.
Let me make sure the question is right. He said last year he was second in total tackles, correct?
Yes, last year. Led
Michael
the team
Kendrick.
In 2014. Michael Kendricks is correct.
All right.
Tell him what he won, Bill.
He won. They signed Vince Papale autographed picture from standing on the steps at the Arby's Inn.
That is awesome because
nice.
I could put that right beside my signed poster that Vince Papale signed of the movie poster. I'll go right
now you're just showing off.
Nice.
Yeah.
By the way, showing off.
By the way, D'Amico Ryans led the team in tackles in 2013 and Malcolm Jenkins in 2015. You know, it shows that Kendricks is, for all the heat that he gets, he's been pretty consistent here for three seasons.
I think
he's
got to
stay healthy and
got to
stay focused. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. If he could stay healthy, I don't think he would get the criticism he gets because he's a good player when he's on the field. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right, Danny. Well, we appreciate you, as always, listening in and giving a call.
Absolutely. I love the show, fellas. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Danny. Take it easy.
Thanks.
All right, fellas. Bye.
Hey, Chet. You spent last night at Citizens Bank Park to witness the firsthand the return of that Chase Utley, and he was certainly the man.
Boy, was he ever. Not a packed, sold-out ballpark like in the glory years when, you know, he and Howard and Rollins were on fire all the time. The announced attendance was 28,000, but it was certainly electric and very loud when Chase was introduced as the Dodgers' leadoff hitter to start the game. I absolutely stood up and cheered, and I'm sorry, Fred Hugo and others who think it's a violation, but I also stood up and cheered when Chase hit those two home runs later on. I had no problem doing that.
Well, you know, Jet, that was going to be my parting shot, but I have decided not to do a parting shot because I can't hardly talk. But my parting shot was going to be exactly that. I have no problem with cheering Chase Utley on his return to Philly, as we did with Mike Richards, we did with Jeff Carter recently, and we did with Jimmy Rollins and all that. I do have a bit of a problem with standing ovations after he beats our brains out. I do have a little trouble with that.
Yeah, and here's my thinking on that. You got to consider the situation. If this were a playoff game, or if the Phillies were, you know, definitely in the wild card hunt, I don't think they are. And maybe if the Phillies were, you know, leading 4-3 at the time, then it might be a violation. You know, if Utley hits a grand slam to put them ahead after they were trailing 4-3 or 4-2, yeah, that's wrong because your team's in a postseason hunt, and then this guy hits one out of the park to put your team behind. I can see that being a violation, but we got to be real. The Phillies are not going to the postseason. This is a guy who, you know, bled for you for 10 or 11 years, whatever he was here, 12 years. The Dodgers are in a playoff hunt. The Phillies are not. And Utley just hit two pretty impressive home runs in his first night back in Philly since being traded away a year ago. And for me, it's not a violation when you consider the situation.
Well, you know, I looked at it this way. I'm watching the game. I saw the home run. When I saw the grand slam, I was like, dang, it's just unbelievable. And
yeah.
But I wasn't cheering, you know. And I even yelled to my son who was in the other room. I said, hey, Utley just hit a grand slam. Is this unbelievable? And and I, as the game ended, I said, man, that just the timing of this guy and what he just accomplished is pretty incredible. But I couldn't say I was cheering for him at that point. He's an incredible player, and he's a great Philly guy and all that stuff. But after that first standing out, I just had to shake my head and say, man, it's pretty incredible, but what cheer for
him. Yeah, and I can understand that. And to be honest, I wouldn't have stood up with the grand slam, but we were sitting in right field, and just to see where the ball was going, you know, as it was hit out to right center, I had to stand up, and then you could see that it was clearing the fence, going into the bullpen area, and just because I was standing up, I started to cheer a little bit. So it wasn't an official standing ovation for the grand slam. I just happened to stand up to see where the ball was going.
There you go. Well, hey, I think we have to say, though, first-class act by the Philly fans. I think we expected it, you know, that Jace would be given a loud ovation, and he certainly was. And, you know, for all the rap that the Philly fans get, they did the right thing, and Jace certainly appreciated it, and the Philly fans appreciated it. And I could do nothing but give hats off to Philly fans. And whether it's a violation or not, you know what, it really doesn't matter. The guy gave his heart and soul, like you said, and they rewarded him. And I got to give hats off to the Philly fans.
Yeah, the fans did a great job, and so did the Phillies. You know, they did a little video thing early in the game. It was all first class, and the fans were terrific. I know Carl's there tonight. I'm sure Carl is cheering Chase on. So great job by the Phillies, and I'm happy to have been there for Chase's return. It was pretty memorable.
Yeah, and, you know, one other thing I want to mention about that is Ryan Howard. You know, they showed Ryan Howard. You probably didn't see it. They showed it on the TV, and Ryan was clapping for Chase, just like he did for Jimmy when Jimmy came back. And, you know, the big piece is red hot, by the way. We could talk about that if we want, but that aside, Ryan Howard just handles himself well in everything that he does as a Philly, representing the Phillies.
Yeah, he does. I'm glad to see that he's hitting again. He's been great since the All-Star break. He was hitting like 150 or so back then. He's up to 197 right now, which, you know, doesn't sound very impressive, but he's been on a tear since the break. Another home run last night. He's got, what, 17 homers in a limited role. That's not bad. I think he is handling everything very, very well. He knows he's not going to be playing more than two games a week now, but when he gets his chances, he's hitting. And yeah, he and Chase were tight, you know, all those years together, so it was nice to see him cheering him on. I did see a little bit of it from the right field stands last night, and then I saw the highlights late last night when I got home, so that was kind of nice to see. I like Ryan Howard, and I'm glad to see the fans cheering him again, and I'm glad to see him responding by hitting and hitting well.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that was his 18th home run, but 375 on his career now, and how fitting was it for him to hit a bomb last night as well, along with Chase. That was kind of cool, too.
Yep, and I got to be honest, I missed that because, like half the ballpark, I left about 2 minutes after the Chase Utley Grand Slam homer.
Oh, my goodness. Never leave the game. One day I'll tell you a story about that happened when I was just a kid with my dad, but that's we'll save that for another day.
Did it involve Jim Rooker?
No, it had to do with Del Unser, though. But that's a story for another day. We'll come back to that. But, hey, let's move on. And I think we've managed to convert you because for some reason, whether it was Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky or whoever, I believe you've become an Olympics fan. Is that right? From a guy that told us a couple
weeks ago, maybe.
You had no interest?
I haven't watched wall-to-wall coverage of the Olympics, but, yeah, I have certainly enjoyed what Phelps and Katie Ledecky have accomplished. I watched a bit of the gymnastics. That little Simone is incredible. And as promised, I took in some of the women's beach volleyball. Yes, sir. That was a great match last night, by the way, even though the U.S. women went down to defeat in their semifinal match. It was a pretty exciting match. And, yeah, I have watched a little bit of the Olympics. I've enjoyed what I've seen. So maybe I'm coming around.
Well, I hope so, because, like Finch said, it's all about red, white, and blue. And what kind of fan wouldn't watch the Olympics?
I hear you. I'm all for the USA. I hope they do continue to, you know, rack up the medals. They're certainly far and away the leader on the medal board. So I'm happy to see that.
All right. Well, hey, Daryl Hill, we mentioned him a couple weeks ago in our list of Olympians from Darby, Pennsylvania, went to Penwood High School. He's getting ready to begin the shot put competition here tomorrow. We need to be rooting for him. He's a Delaware County guy, and we need these guys that are guys and gals that are close to home to keep winning.
Yeah, I'm all for it. So, you know, let's have a big final week here, and I wish them all luck.
That's right. All right. Okay, Chet, that's, you know, it's getting to be real football season, and we have a special guest next week who's going to provide all sorts of insight. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. But he was among our earliest guests 2.5 years ago. He's also one of the three members now of our five-timers club, five visits to the Philly Press Box Radio. He's got a new book coming out in a few weeks. Yeah, another one. He'll be able to talk about that. He's also a longtime Eagles beat writer, back with us for the first time since last September, believe it or not, but his sixth overall visit to Philly Press Box Radio. We're talking, of course, about NJ.com's Mark Eckel.
Well, you know, Mark, he's got his finger on the pulse. He certainly he posts enough stuff, writes enough stuff. He's at practice every day, and he's got his finger on what's going on down there at the NovaCare Center.
I'll tell you, if they are paying him by the post or by the, you know, articles, he's a rich man. He's cranking out like five or six a day, I think.
Yeah, he is. And you know, it's good stuff because he always gives he gives the writer something to think about. A lot of times it's not even articles as much as it's questions. It's just things to think about. And, you know, great for Eagles fans to say their piece. I have to be sure to tell Mark next week, Chet, that I will be in town giving Monday, the Monday after Thanksgiving, when the Green Bay Packers come to Citizens Bank Park, Lincoln Financial Field.
Mark's
there.
A Packers fan.
Yes, he is. So I have to let him know that I'll be there watching Aaron Rodgers.
Ah, nice. And by the way, one of Mark's articles today indicated he thinks there might be another trade coming. He pointed out that Howie's been one of the most active GMs in terms of trades. When he was in charge 2010 to 2014, Howie made something like 35 deals. So you don't hear a lot about trades in the NFL, but Howie has certainly been different. He's taken a different approach, making a lot of deals. Take this offseason, for example, and then the deal yesterday for the wide receiver. He thinks there might be another shoe to drop. You know, maybe they would trade Aguilar, he even hinted, in exchange for an offensive tackle. So we shall see.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting to see because we certainly need tackles. We need a starting
tackle,
and we need a ready-to-go replacement tackle if Jason Peters goes down. As you, I believe, said, a 9 and under on him, I think, already.
Yeah, I think I said something like that, 9.5. If he's involved in more than 9 or 10 games, I'll be surprised. I wanted to ask Vince Papale, but we didn't have time, you know, what he thought about the whole Lane Johnson situation, because we still don't have confirmation that there's going to be a 10-game suspension. We're assuming there is, but they might wait until, you know, week one of the season to officially announce it. I wanted to ask Vince what he thought about all that. And I wanted to ask also, you know, if he knew if there was any kind of PED abuse back in the 1970s, because you never really heard much about it until, I guess, like the late 80s or so. So I wanted to ask Vince what he thought about that.
Yeah, that'd been a good question. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention about the Eagles game the other day, and somebody that I want to watch as the preseason plays out a little bit, is that Jalen Watkins. He was, you know, I don't know how well he played because I only got to see it one time with my eyes and no replays. But he was very active. He made a lot of plays. He was involved in a lot of stuff. And, you know, it was good to see. And defensively, I kind of thought he stood out quite a bit. And I want to see how that plays out here going forward.
Yeah, he did get some very good reviews, and he's certainly a candidate to get more playing time in that secondary.
Yeah, so we'll be looking forward to that. Of course, you know, Malcolm Jenkins didn't play. There was a whole lot of DNPs in that game, so it's, you know, like the entire preseason, it's hard to tell. We're not going to get too excited about anything until we strap them up on December 11th and get it on for real.
Yep, you know it.
All right. Well, hey, let's get our signing update of Carl's Cards and Collectibles going. You can tell football season has arrived. Carl has added a couple signings this week, and Chet, you might like this one. Eagles all-time leading receiver Harold Carmichael will be in the store on September 10th. I know when we were at the Dick Vermeil golf outing, you hunted down Harold for a photo op. So
I did.
I thought that you would certainly like this signing.
Yeah, much as I stalked Tara Reid at Monster Mania Con Friday night in Cherry Hill to get a photo with her, I stalked Harold Carmichael back in June at the Dick Vermeil event because he was one of my all-time favorite birds back in the day. It was a real thrill to meet him in June, so I just may have to plan a trip to Havertown to say hello to Big Harold again on September 10th.
Well, with no disrespect to Harold, but Tara Reid was definitely the better photo op.
I'm not going to say anything further about that.
Well, hey, as we mentioned last week, new Eagles defensive back Roddy McLeod will be in the store September 24th. And check this one out, Chet. Longtime Hockey Hall of Famer, the Golden Jet, Bobby Hull, will be in the store on October 8th. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, that was a surprise. Carl teased us with a little advance on that, saying it was a Hall of Famer. And then he put up a hockey picture of some sort. So, yeah, Bobby Hull is going to be in the store, the Golden Jet. He was certainly a favorite of any hockey fan back in the 1960s.
Yeah, what a player. What a player. Well, hey, stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website carlscards.com. or contact Carl on Twitter. Well, Mr. Chesko, I am going to forego my parting shot, as I said, because of my voice situation. So I am going to leave it to you. I'm sure you have one.
I do, and then feel free to discuss afterward. All right, I haven't watched every season, but I do really enjoy HBO's Hard Knocks. Season 11 began last week, and it focuses on the Rams, who are now, of course, back in Los Angeles. So, not surprisingly, Episode 1 gave us plenty of shots of the sun, palm trees, crashing waves, Sia's cover of California Dreamin' playing over one scene, and Lakers coach Luke Walton and L.A. Rams legend Rosie Grier stopping by. Of course, there is lots of football stuff along the way. We heard Jeff Fisher make a phone call to Nick Foles, in which the coach officially released the former Birds quarterback. Then we saw Fisher cut wide receiver Deion Long for taking a girl into his dorm room. Long was then signed by the Eagles, only to be cut a few days later. But there's also a bunch of other cool reality TV show fluff, which is actually pretty entertaining. In the first episode alone, we learn that Rams center Eric Kush has an extensive tank top collection, saying he has a tank for every occasion. Defensive tackle Aaron Donald is a hell of a ping pong player, we found out. And rookie quarterback Jared Goff has a crush on Taylor Swift. And, get this, he doesn't know where the sun rises and sets. Also, defensive line coach Mike Waffle is a real scene stealer. The ex-Marine uses some very colorful language. I can't wait to see episode 2, which aired Tuesday night. I didn't watch it yet, though. Apparently, I'm going to see some training camp fights, Coach Fisher labeling two guys who crashed a golf cart as dumb and dumber, and defensive tackle William Hayes saying he believes mermaids exist, but that dinosaurs did not. Hard Knocks is heavily entertaining.
Well, I haven't seen this year's at all because I kind of watch them in a group when I do watch them. But last year, you know, they did the Houston Texans. And
yeah, and
they,
I didn't watch last year.
Oh, my gosh. They did, well, you want to talk about bad language. I think Bill O'Brien invented bad language. But,
oh,
no. But I can tell you, the J.J. Watt stuff they showed last year was just so unbelievable. When you watch that stuff, I mean, it's real. It's real camp stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And what J.J. Watt was doing, That's why you look at J.J. Watt and say, this is one special football player and special human being. Just ridiculous, the stuff he would do.
Yeah. I do remember enjoying the New York Jets one a few years ago. Rex Ryan was very colorful as well.
Yes, yes. Well, it's not a nursery school. That's for darn sure.
No.
All
yeah,
right.
Check it out when you get a chance. Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I will. Do we have anything else you want to add while we have about 30 extra seconds?
I just wanted to – this could have been a parting shot last week or this week, but I never got around to writing it. Jim Thome going on the Phillies Wall of Fame kind of bothered me a little bit because of the fact that he was only there three full seasons, then he came back, you know, later for a half-season cameo. There's got to be some kind of limitation. And originally that's what it was. I think you had to be there, you know, four or five full seasons, but then they kind of scrapped that, I guess, because they were running out of candidates in recent years. So Jim Thome going on the Phillies Wall of Fame, great guy, great player overall, but again, only three and a fraction seasons with the Phillies. What do you think?
Well, funny you mentioned that, because that was going to be my other parting shot as well before I got to the Chase Utley deal. Yeah, you know,
yep.
I'm with you. I mean, it's just too watered down, I think. And, you know, how far do you go? I mean, you got a guy, and he wasn't necessarily a fan favorite, but if you look at the numbers, you have a Bobby Abreu guy who played like 11 seasons in Philly, hit over 300 for his career as a Philly, and he's not in. But then you bring a guy with 3 years in, and you put him on there. You know, it's what is the criteria? And I guess I'm with you. I think there should be some criteria. And you know, when we talked to Larry Christensen back last year, you know, and I thought LC had a little better record than he did, but he said he wasn't what I forget. He said 82 games or something like that. That's certainly not worthy of being in a Wall of Fame to me.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I agree with you on Abreu. And, there's got to be more than three seasons. And there was some talk on Facebook, Pete Rose. Why not Pete Rose? The Reds got permission to, you know, honor him. Pete Rose certainly belongs on the Phillies Wall of Fame.
Absolutely.
5 years.
It's long overdue, and he's got 5 years and two World Series. Pete needs to be there. And if he wasn't allowed to be in before, he can be allowed to be in now, and it's time to put him in there.
You got it. Let's do it.
All right. Well, hey, we're at the top of the hour, so let's thank the Invincible, Vince Papale, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for the continuing support of this show. Larry Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Farnham. Hopefully next week we'll be back in a whole lot better voice and feeling a whole lot better, but we hope you enjoyed the show anyway, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio Wednesday, August 24th at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Mark Eckel, talking a lot of Eagles football. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
Chase Utley, you are the man!